The Australian Rugby League Commission made arguably its biggest decision this week, changing the policy regarding poor player behaviour. I'm Zach Bailey, joined by our chief reporter, Michael Chamis, and our special guest, ARLC Chairman Peter Beattie. Now, you're the one that brought upon this change with, along with your commissioners. How have you found the reaction so far?
Well, generally, it's been good. I mean, whenever you bring about real change, inevitably, there's always going to be critics. That's simply life. This was a change, though, that was in the best interest of rugby league. Overwhelmingly, fans have been positive, clubs have been positive. 15 out of 16 had already agreed, and they were supportive of it. I mean, Sir George were never going to be supportive, that's understandable. There was some criticism from the Players Association, but volunteers, people working in the game, players, we've got a very positive response, and I hope that continues.
Peter, you mentioned the Dragons, obviously, for various reasons, they wouldn't agree to this stance at the moment, but can you understand their frustrations in regards to the timing of this? Because Jack DeBell and this issue's been in the media and obviously public domain since December. So can you understand their frustrations in terms of waiting until 2 weeks before the start of the season to drop the hammer?
Look, I can understand their frustration, but as you know, these alleged matters didn't take place until December. January, we're all on holidays. I mean, you could invade Australia in January and no one would be home. And that's unrealistic to try and expect that to happen. But clearly we started work on this late January, February, and here we are at the end of February, we made a decision. The important thing about this is, though, this is the most significant change to the rules for a generation. You don't rush into it. We had a 74-page document before us to consider, and that looked at what other sports did both in Australia and overseas. We had to have detailed advice that went with it because we had to consider a whole lot of elements. This was not easy, and therefore we needed to do this properly. And I got to say, look, I don't make excuses for that. The fact that we did this thoroughly, properly, and consulted. We spoke to every club. I sat down with St George, we rang every other chairman, I spoke to some of those personally, in face-to-face in addition to phone calls. We had to talk to all our sponsors, we had to talk to our broadcasters. So, you know, you've got to take the game with you. And now the game was consulted, then we made a decision.
Wouldn't it have been important, though, to speak to Jack DeBellin? I know Todd spoke to him on the eve of the announcement, but he was consulted the day before.
Well, the reality for us is you've got to remember this matters before the court. We've got to be careful not to interfere in matters before the court. It's easy to say, and I understand it's a fair question, but I think people need to appreciate when matters are before the court, if the NRL turns up, it could be seen to be interfering with the case, the procedures before the court. We could be in contempt. You can only do that through St George. Now, Todd was talking to St George on an ongoing basis. When we sat down with St George, we talked about talking to Jack DeBellin, and it was agreed that there would be a meeting. That came out of our meeting with St George. We had to talk to St George about that. Now, people can argue about whether we did it, should have done it before and all the rest of it, but the truth of the matter is you've got to respect Jack DeBellin's rights, you've got to respect the fact that he's innocent until proven guilty, and you cannot interfere in a court case.
Peter, you mentioned yesterday, and Todd stressed it as well, that you were worried not only about the victim's welfare, but also Jack and everyone surrounding him. Now, Michael, you've got some fresh news about Jack and how he's travelling.
Yeah, Jack DeBellin's been granted time away to deal with, obviously, the emotional toll of what's happened in regards to the last 24 hours. He's been, obviously, allowed to train with the club, but under this, obviously, leave he's been granted, he'll get some time away before he returns. Peter, I'd like to think you've spoken to Todd since he met with Jack. What's been the message from Todd in regards to Jack's welfare and his mental status?
Well, we've communicated, and I did this in front of all the chairs and CEOs. I said to St George in front of the whole game that we would work with them to ensure that whatever support Jack DeBellin needed from the NRL, in addition to the club, we'd provide. I said we would work closely with them. And that's one of the reasons the decision meant that any player stood down, and this includes obviously Jack DeBellin, will be paid their full salary, and not only that, they are entitled to train. That was all about player welfare. So from our point of view, anything we can do to support him, from a welfare point of view, obviously the NRL will do, and Todd understands he has to do that.
One of those players who is concerned about Jack DeBellin's welfare is the Dragons skipper. Here's what he had to say recently about Jack DeBellin.
First and foremost, we want to worry about his welfare. It's really important. Like, as friends, as a club, he's going through a difficult time. And like I said before, we'll be there supporting along the way if he needs us. And I think everyone just leaves him alone. His welfare is the most important thing for us now as a club. And he's away doing what he needs to do. And like I said, his mindset is the most important thing right now.
Yeah, Gareth Widdop speaking there. Peter, do you think the Dragons have enough I suppose, people in place and experts in place to look after Jack DeBellin going through this, because it is unprecedented in terms of this new rule being in place and a player being stood down while they're before the courts in a case that could stretch out to 24 months?
Well, it is unprecedented, that's correct. And that's why, as I said, we've made a decision that in these circumstances, a player who stood down should receive their pay, is entitled to, in fact, train. And look, we'll work with St George. As I said, I gave an open invitation to St George in front of every chair and every CEO in this game that we would work and support them. Now, you've got to remember, St George is a good club. They are well run. The CEO and chair are good people. They are a resource club, and they have, I know, a significant amount of capacity to provide support to Jack DeBellin. But if they needed anything more, then the NRL would step up.
Peter, in previous years, there was a similar charge. Anthony Lefranchi was on similar charges, and the charges were dropped. Now, in this situation, you're willing to grant the Dragons salary cap relief. If they bring a player in to replace Jack DeBellin over the next period, and those charges are dropped, that's going to have some significant ramifications on the salary cap structure around their team. How do you handle that going forward? Because there's been obviously incidents in the past where charges are dropped.
Sure, and if that happens and charges are dropped in any case, let me talk generically, then that player is welcome back to play NRL football from then on. I mean, this rule only applies while the charges are pending or while the case has not been heard. In terms of salary cap, what the decision was, it's not automatic. St George have to apply to the salary cap auditor to, in fact, get salary cap relief. They may not want to. I don't want to get into areas where this may not apply. They may not want to. If they do apply, I think that they'll be granted it because this is the first time the rule is applied. We'll look at each case. This is a matter that Todd will have to manage with the club. If, in fact, they got salary cap relief, they would be able to bring another player in and add to their squad. That would depend on who the player was and the circumstances. You'd have to look at each circumstances in each club before you could actually make a determination, and that would be done by the NRL.
So we could have a situation where the Dragons may be over the cap, though. If Jack DeBellin, or just for any club, for example, if they are free to return to the club to playing while they've brought another play, and they'll be over the cap.
Well, that's why, let's go back to this, that's why we've given them salary cap relief. They would need to work out whether they want that, to spend additional money. I mean, that can be managed. I mean, we can manage that sensibly. The player may only come on for a short period of time. Who knows who's available? It's really hard to do this without talking about particular circumstances. If those happen, I'm happy to come back and talk about the circumstances rather than be hypothetical.
Yeah. Peter, at the press conference, you said that if it wasn't for the tsunami, and that's the word you used, of incidents over the off-season, then you may not have been forced to make this new rule or put this new fault rule in place. So with that in mind, if Jack DeBellin's case was a single case over the off-season, would we be in this position where he is currently stood down?
Well, as I said yesterday, and you're quite right, I said that there were a whole tsunami of events, and they were. Why is that relevant? It's relevant because if the old rules, or the ones that exist until the new one comes in, if they'd been working, then there wouldn't have been a need for change. But clearly, they weren't working. So that's why we needed to bring in a rule with more teeth. And that's what we've done. We've given Todd Greenberg more teeth to deal with these sorts of issues. So that was the point I was trying to make. This was actually not about one individual player. This was about clearly looking at the fact the number of cases demonstrated the rule didn't work. That was really what I was saying. When it didn't work, we needed one with more teeth.
So if we fast forward 12 months, and next summer, hopefully it's not the case, but if we have the same amount of incidents, it's clear, do you say that this rule doesn't work?
Well, it will work.
Because if it's not a deterrent for players now, then, well, I mean, how much harder can you get?
Well, the new rule's not in yet. I reckon it will be. Because remember this, if someone's charged, it's an automatic no fault, you're out. As I said, no fault. We make no determination about innocence or guilt. They're innocent until found guilty. The bottom line is, though, they automatically go out. All this, see, part of the problem here is the speculation goes on. Will this person be stood down? Won't they be stood down? All that sort of nonsense. And you've seen that over the last few weeks. That's all gone. If someone fits into that category above the line of the 11 years plus maximum penalty, it's over. It's automatic. That's what the benefit for the game is. The other benefit is it'll bring about cultural change, we think. That is, it'll make a whole change, that tiny, tiny percent of players who were caught up in this behaviour, in some cases alleged behaviour, but behaviour, that's what we have to change. You've got to remember that 99% of all players are actually model citizens, and we need to emphasise that.
You hear the word culture thrown around in sport a lot, and especially rugby league, not only on a broad level in terms of the game, but also at clubs, whether it be juniors or not, but especially at NRL level. So is there a culture problem, and how big influence will this rule have to change it?
Look, there is some, in some areas there's cultural problems, and if there weren't, then we wouldn't have these problems. So let's be frank and upfront about it. That's self-evident as far as I'm concerned. But we are hoping that there will be cultural change in those areas with this rule. Because look, we need to get to the heart of this, and that's one of the reasons why this is only one of three measures we're bringing in. This is the big stick, if you like. Then come April, there will be a strategy about consistency and penalties that'll come forward to the Commission. Then at the end of the year, Professor Megan Davis will come forward with her work on culture and education, about how we get to the heart of this and stop it happening in the first place. And if we do that, we'll support players through this. We actually do want to support players, but we are responsible for the future of the game, the well-being and welfare of the game, if you like, and that's why we've got this three-stage approach, which is why we made this decision this week.
Peter, one last question on this before we touch on today's events. Have you heard, because apparently you received a letter a couple of days ago from Jack DeBellin's lawyers. Have you, since the announcement, heard from Jack DeBellin or the Dragons in regards to the rule change or what you said?
Oh, look, the lawyers write from time to time. Yes, they've written and asked details about the decision and the reasons behind it. Quite a reasonable letter, and they'll get a reasonable reply.
Are you worried about the legal ramifications of this?
Look, people have got rights. I mean, I'm a lawyer, right? I understand that. People have got rights. We've made a decision in the best interest of rugby league. This is about the whole of the game, all the players, not just one player. So that's our position, and that's our job. That's our responsibility to do that. If we don't look after the welfare of the game, no one will. But people have rights beyond that, and if people want to take action, that is entirely a matter for them. They have to fund it. They have to pursue it. If they do it, then they have a right to do it, and I make no judgment about that.
Peter, before we do move on, I do have one more question about
this. I knew you would.
If I'm allowed, Michael. I know you are the chief.
No, that's fine. I thought I was wrapping it up nicely for it.
And there will be speculation, as you say. I want to know the situation. It's a hypothetical, so I know you probably won't like it. But say a player comes off contract while their court case is still being heard. Say they're off contract November 1, but their next hearing might not be until January or February, and their contract finishes at the end of one season. If they're up for a charge under this new no-fault rule, the NRL won't re-register their contract, I'm guessing, like the other player. And if they don't, that player will no longer be paid and will no longer be allowed to train.
We'll look at those circumstances if they happen.
But that's a real possibility.
Yes, it is a possibility, absolutely, and we discussed that. We'll look at that possibility if it happens, and we'll talk to the club, we'll work those things through. The basic support system for the player, which is the two prongs I talked about, being paid and obviously being able to train, we're not going to leave someone out on the limb. We'll work that through with the club.
So it's a possibility.
All those things.
NRL pays for the player.
I didn't say that. But because you know that the NRL's not paying for the player now. It's actually the club. Look, we'll work those things through. Look, it's a very legitimate question, and it may well happen in the future. My hope is this rule will bring in a cultural change, and we never have that situation happen. That's the will, and that's why I think that's the hope, and that's what we want to see happen. If that changes, we'll worry about that then.
All right, Michael, you want to move on?
Oh, just in regards to today's the salary cap breaches, the general talk is why should clubs come forward in the future? Because we've seen in recent years that the salary cap breaches have been a result of a whistleblower or a club coming forward. Now, is the game doing enough, or should the game be doing more and being more powers? Because it seems as though without the whistleblower or the clubs coming forward, no one is getting caught.
Well, except for Cronulla, of course. I mean, Barry Russell came forward, and as a result of that, he saved the Sharks $500,000. So we, as you can see that, when Todd Greenberg and the NRL made that decision, there was a clear reward for the CEO having the honesty to come forward. And that's a pretty strong incentive to clubs to say, hang on, the guy did the right thing, it saves Cronulla $500,000. That's not a bad reward for being honest. Look, clearly whistleblowers are important. For me, I've talked to Todd about this, and the Commission will look at it. There's $1 million fine. I mean, we may seriously look at increasing that, and that's something we're going to consider this year. We need everyone to understand the strength of rugby league is based on the equality and the fairness, if you like, the competition, the system. You look at how many different premiership champions we've had. That's good for the game. You know codes that are monopolised by three or four games, they lose fans eventually, unless they're wedded on or addicted like you might get with soccer. But nevertheless, having an even competition where anybody could win it is really good for the game. So that is only brought around about by a good application of the salary cap. We have a firm view about the salary cap. Let me be really clear about this. The Commission strongly supports a position that we enforce the salary cap. Now, if we believe it's not working effectively, we will continue to review it, and that may see an increase in fines. We'll see.
You've worked in politics and you're a lawyer as
sadly.
Well.
What's
funner, the NRL or politics, but we won't go there. But in terms of heavy fines, the Bulldogs back in 2002, the Warriors in 2005, the Storm in 2010, the Eels, the Seagulls, now the Sharks, all in recent years. And is there a strong enough deterrent? And why does it happen in rugby league, in the NRL, more often than it does in other sports?
Well, the reality is, let's talk about penalties. I mean, you can either increase the fines, which is a possibility, or you can take points off them. Premiership points. I mean, that is one of the things that clubs
That's the punishment, but it has to happen first, and it doesn't seem to happen in other codes, even in Australia,
well,
like the AFL.
Look, Todd is doing an audit and going around all the clubs, talking to them, talking to the CEOs, talking to the boards, and I obviously talk to them as well. We are hopeful of getting, again, another cultural change where people don't do this. The reality is you need a big stick at one end, which we are happy to apply, and if the penalties are not working, we will look at them. Again, we're not going to muck around with this stuff. As I said, having a good salary cap application is important for the strength of the competition. But we also need to make sure that we've got a bit of honey in there as well, and that is encourage clubs to do the right thing, increase their management techniques, all those sorts of things, so it doesn't happen. You're quite right.
Peter, what's the ballpark financial figure of the cost on the game over this off-season from hell?
Oh, look, I have a rough figure in my head, but I'm not going to share it with you because, frankly, I'm about rebuilding the game. What we want to do is get through. Now we've had the new rule yesterday. We've had all the penalties today. The season launches on the 7th of March. I'm really looking forward to getting on the paddock so we can actually talk about football, have some controversy about refereeing, have some controversy about bunker decisions, have some controversy about whatever. No, it's football. So, look, let me give you a serious answer nevertheless because it's an important question. The threat to... We actually lost a lot of money. We lost millions out of this. Let's be really clear. We have to rebuild that. Some of that was potential. We haven't actually lost it just yet. It's potential. Some clubs have lost money. They told me they've lost sponsors when I rang around and talked to all the chairs. But it's potential that we've lost. Now, if you look at our figures, our financial figures we released to the chairs the other day and the CEOs, 2018 was a good year. We're in the black. But that was last year. When people see these figures, remember, that's last year. This year it will not be as good, and it will not be as good because of the impact of off-field behaviour. And I hear, you know, I see people sort of, you know, make excuses for not changing these rules and we'll do it all the, you know, you say, what will you do? And end up, by and large, it comes back to, I'll look at my navel. Well, when you're the commission, you cannot do that. We have to think about the welfare of the game, not just in terms of mums and dads who are making decisions about who will play, and that's really important for the future generation, but it is about the commercial realities. If we're not worth as a game as much as we were in the last media deal, who loses? Players get paid less. I say that again, players lose out here, not just the game. Clubs lose out, the NRL loses out, grassroots football loses out, the whole game loses. That's why we had to be clear about this. And I must admit to some degree of frustration to see some of the arguments against these changes, because frankly, a lot of it, some of it was self-interest, some of it had a lack of understanding of what position the game was in. We were in a very perilous position as a result. Now we've revived that, retrieved it. We will go back to sponsors. We'll go back to the people who may have not have been supporting us. And I hope this decision will win those back.
Are you, as a commissioner of the ARLC, you have to look forward. Are you concerned about the state where we'll be in the next broadcast rights because of a lot of these implications of off-field behaviour?
The answer is yes and no. It would have been a very serious position for us if we had not done what we did this week. I feel confident that that decision shows we're serious about re-adding or getting extra value back to our game. We lost value. I mean, let's say it as it is, but we can rebuild that. We can rebuild that as a result of what we did. And look, people look for leadership. Corporate sector looks for leadership. Our broadcast partners look for leadership. They look for quality on the field, but they look for leadership because their viewers will not be watching a game. It doesn't matter how good the players on the field are. If they are worried about a smell around a game, they're not going to watch. Yeah. It means that young kids won't play it, mums and dads won't watch it, women won't play it. That's why we had to do what we did. I believe we can rebuild from there. I think the decision we made will enable us to recoup that lost ground. That's my hope, but that won't happen quickly. That will take a year of good season and minimum disruption to do it. If we can have a great year in 2019, we can retrieve what happened in the off-season. It'll take that long.
You done, Michael?
I think I'm okay now.
Peter, you're looking forward to the footy.
Abso-bloody-lute.
Who's going to win the comp?
It's
a million-dollar question.
I'm supposed to be. Look at the great teams running around. I mean, Roosters are obviously in great shape. Mm. And I spoke to Nick Politis the other day. I had breakfast with him, and I got to say, he is just, you know, cock a hoop. He's won three things. He won, you know, as you know, he won the whole three. He won the anyway. I'll get through him. He won the whole three, and you don't get any better than that. So, but they're obviously going to be strong. I think the Rabbits will be strong. You got a new coach up at the Broncos. I reckon he'll be will be strong, and I think the Broncos will do very well. Melbourne, you can never write off.
So, Peter, you're sitting.
And I want to see the Bulldogs do well.
I want to see the Bulldogs. We put all the hard questions to you. The easiest one, and you've dodged.
Look, I'm supposed to.
Because we want you to be sitting here after the grand final, and you may have predicted the grand final winner.
I tell you what I really want to see. At the end of it, who wins the grand final is important, but I want to see Parramatta, I want to see the Bulldogs, I want to see the Titans, and the Tigers, those clubs that have been sort of doing it hard for a while. I want to see one of those do really well.
Okay. One of Sydney's Western teams.
I'll
wait for Easter Monday, by the way.
Well, what a great thing it's going to be out at Western Sydney Stadium. Think about that. That's going to be fantastic.
It will be great. And it was fantastic having you in today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Not ducking and weaving any of the questions.
No.
43 minutes of the press conference. We've held you up for about 20 minutes here. So we'll let you get away and enjoy your weekend.
Well, it's the first time I've been here in a year that I've been chairman. So it's long overdue. So thank you for having me.
We're waiting for a big day like yesterday.
Well, I had to wait until you had something to really talk
about. That's right. All right. As always, as I said, thank you for your company.
Pleasure.
It was a big week for the National Rugby League and ARLC this week. It's a big week for NRL.com next week with Inside the NRL returning for the first time in 2019. Katie Brown, Michael Chamis and Jamie Saab will be in to discuss all the big talking points ahead of 2019. It's been another tough day for the West Tigers with the NRL announcing sanctions to the club. I'm Zach Bailey, joined by our chief reporter Michael Chamis and West Tigers chair Marina Go. Marina, what was your initial reaction to the fines and the punishment handed down to CEO Justin Pascoe?
Today's announcement? Look, the club's just relieved. I think that it's finally over for us. So now we can move on and get into the season. We're looking forward to a really strong 2019.
At any stage, did you think that you would appeal? Because at the time, obviously, when it was first reported, that you weren't too happy with it, but you came around to...
I think if we hadn't been comfortable with the result, that avenue was open to us and we would have reserved the right to use it. But we're looking forward to moving on from where we are today. And as I said to you, everyone in the club is just relieved that it's finally over.
Marina, when you look back at this situation, what has the club learnt? Because by the sounds of it, it was more of a governance issue in terms of overlooking something rather than a deliberate attempt to rot the cap.
Yeah. Look. Clearly, when we first became aware of this issue, we already, before there was any sanction or any, you know, announcement of sanction, the club had already moved into strengthening some of our governance procedures because clearly, there was information that wasn't coming to us. And so that's what you do, right? When you realise that there's something like that, you change the process. And so we acted on that straight away and those processes are already in place. So,
to have CEO Justin Pascoe back, what does that mean for the club to have him back in June?
I think it's important for the organisation this year and in the future. Justin has been a good leader of our club and he certainly led our club to a very strong position in the NRL. We're very proud of the progress that we've made. We're extremely proud of our club and I know that our fans and sponsors will be very keen to have him back.
What was your knowledge of the ambassador role, Marina? Because obviously at the time with Jason Taylor and Robbie Farah, there was a lot of tension there. What was your knowledge of it at the time? And then when you found out that it hadn't been disclosed, your reaction to that?
obviously we believe that we should have disclosed it. And we believe that the outcome would be different had we have disclosed it, because it was a procedural mistake. Naturally, we wanted to ensure that that it doesn't happen again. Is probably the best way to phrase it.
Just for viewers, just to recap, so you're initially here with a $750,000 fine, which was halved to $375,000.
Yep.
You're also hit with the $670,000 salary cap penalty, $639,000, which is over this year and next, which was initially going to be over the 1 year. Then obviously Justin Pascoe won't return to duties till June.
Mm-hmm.
Of those three, because it hits the footy department or the whole club in different areas in terms of on-field administration and also in terms of a fine, which hurts the club the most?
Oh, look, none of it's ideal, but I think, we're a footy club, and so clearly the impact on the salary cap is the most difficult, I would think, for us and certainly for our new coach. You know, he now has to manage this year knowing that that's the case. And it only became clear to us late yesterday. So he's going to take some time to get used to that and to think about what that looks like for us this year. So, yeah, it would be crazy for us to say that wasn't the biggest impact, given that we're a football club.
What about the actual the fine itself? Because a few years ago, the club was struggling financially.
Yeah.
I think the club was going to announce a $360,000 profit at some point.
Yeah.
Are you better equipped now to handle that than you were a few years ago?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think if this had happened to us, 2-3 years ago even, it could have crippled the club. But we're a really strong club. We're in a much stronger financial situation. We have fantastic sponsors who have stood by the club through this entire process, and obviously a great fan base. In fact, our membership during this period is the highest it's been ever in our history. And at one point, we had a jump of 50% year on year, compared to the same time last year. So, we're in a position of strength. This is not ideal, of course. Nobody wants this to happen, but we will. We'll come back stronger. It's what we'll do as a club. We're in a good position.
Now, you were quite stern with your word choice when this all came out in December.
Yes.
What's your mindset now?
When I was very stern with my word choice in December, it was in reaction to the scale of the sanction at the time. Naturally, I felt it was completely over the top, and the club felt. Today, the sanctions have been rolled back, largely, not entirely. And as I said, it's not ideal. It's never going to be ideal, but we're in a much more comfortable position with the sanctions that we've been given now. So, the reaction's different because the sanction's different.
How's Robbie been through all this? Because I know at the time I even felt like he said, I'll walk if that was the case, then the club would be free of this cap penalty.
Yeah, look, it's really unfortunate that that Robbie's name was ever dragged into this, to be honest with you, because, naturally, as a player, he felt responsible. And nobody wants to feel like that. It's a team sport. He didn't want to feel like he's responsible for the position that we're now in, and he's not responsible. And we've gone to great lengths to ensure that he knows that we're not that we don't think he's responsible. But of course, it's played on his mind. And he did make the offer to walk. And of course, the coach said that's not going to happen. But there hasn't been an issue. The playing group have embraced him. He's okay. But I just thought that was the unfair aspect, that his name was, aligned to the ambassador agreement.
Now, you'll be hit with a $639,000 salary cap deduction over the next 2 years. How much, when you look at that time, and Robbie Farah's obviously going to be around for the rest of this year, but has he even agreed to take on that ambassador role after his time is up?
Well, he says he hasn't, so he's telling us he's not even sure that he's going to do it, and he may never take it up. Robbie's a very successful businessman in his own right. I mean, he's exactly what you want for a footballer to be setting himself up for the future. So it may not be anything that he ever wants to do. I mean, for Robbie, I know that it was more of a symbol for him of the club's respect for him as a club legend and, someone who'd been with the club for a very long time. And so I think that's all it meant to him. But you know, I mean, it exists, right? So it exists. So if he decides he wants to take it up, then he's free to take it up, but he may never.
Was it put forward to him to push him out the door, or was it put forward to him so that when he did walk out the door, he left with the respect that he'd probably earned over that 10 to 15 year period he's at the club?
Yeah, look, I can only speak about what we know the intent to be. Obviously, the NRL has taken a different view of this, otherwise we wouldn't have the sanction that we have. But yeah, it was about respect, you know, it was entirely about respect.
Do you feel like he has feels pressure now that he has to take it up, given the impact it's had on
no,
the club?
No, look, I really don't. I don't think so. I don't think he feels that at all. You know, he has said to us, I think he said it publicly actually, that he's not sure that he would take it up. So, no, I don't think he feels any pressure.
Does he have to take it up straight away? Or can,
no,
is it a deal
no,
that might, you know, no. In 10 years he might think, I want to come back and
oh, no, I don't, I,
be part, of the,
no,
be part of the club?
He can't do it in 10 years, but there, you know, there is a time frame after which he finishes playing that he would need to determine if he's going to take it up. But, you look, you know, as I said, it's we haven't sat down with him and had that discussion because he's not finished yet. He's still playing with us.
Now, Marina, the other part of today was the fact that Zane Musgrove will not have his contract registered with the club. Now, you've been paying him to train. Mm-hmm. Will you continue to pay him to train? We see, obviously, Jack DeBellin's been stood down and will continue to play with the Dragons and get paid.
Yeah.
What's your stance with Zane Musgrove?
Yeah, so the NRL announced today that they were not going to approve his registration. And he's been training with us, and obviously us with the knowledge that if the NRL was not to register him, then obviously he can't play. So it's not the same case as standing somebody down because he's already effectively stood down. We will regroup next week and have a conversation about this. You know, the playing group, the coach, head of football, they're all in New Zealand, as you know, for a trial. So we need to have a conversation within our club because obviously if, you know, if he's found not guilty of his charge, then... And then the NRL may or may not decide to register him. If they decide not to, well, then it's taken out of our hands. If they decide to register him and the coach wants him, you know, Michael Maguire has given him a very, very strong character reference to the board and he believes in him. So my understanding is that if he is found not guilty of his charge, then Michael would like him to play for us. But we have to discuss all of that next week as a board, and we need to do it with our coach present.
Now, you were quite vocal in supporting the stance that ARLC and Peter Beattie took in terms of standing down players on serious charges. Now, what do you say to people who are critical of the fact that you hadn't done the same with Zane Musgrove?
Yeah, well, you know, as I very clearly stated in every media interview that I've done, that it's aggravated sexual assault. So it's at the top end. It's in the area that that you know Peter Beattie and Todd Greenberg spoke about yesterday when they said that it's an immediate stand down. Mm. This is not that. You know, this isn't that. This is in the grey area where you know Todd has said he gets to exercise discretion. So it is grey. And as I said to you, in discussions with the board, our coach and our head of football have given very strong character references for Zane. And so unless there's evidence that the NRL's aware of that we're not aware of, we really need to tread carefully here and make sure that we consider, you know, all the facts of this matter.
What's been your dialogue with the NRL over the last 24 hours?
Sorry, I don't know what you mean by that. What do you mean by
have
that?
Like, in terms of where the club stands going forward, has there been any dialogue at all with you?
With me personally?
Yeah.
No. I mean, Todd left a message on my phone this morning, but I haven't had a chance to speak to him. But no, we haven't had a conversation about anything going forward. I imagine that, you know, the sanctions are the sanctions and we move on from here. And we just get back to the business of running a football club and hopefully fielding a winning team this year. That's what we hope.
Now, there's a lot of talk about, and there always has been, with your future in the game. Now, there's been a lot of talk about your position.
Mm-hmm.
There's a suggestion that you've resigned. Is that is that on the mark? Have you had enough at this point in time?
Look, you know, I've been with the club for 4.5 years now. And when I first joined, it was a 2x2 tenure for independent directors. And, you know, the shareholder directors have wanted me to stay, which is really great. So, you know, my club is great. I'm really proud of everything that we've done. You know, I wanted the club to get to profitability. The club was profitable last year. So, you know, I feel really proud of what we've done. I'm not going to be there forever. I've always said that. And I think that I think it's really important, actually, that clubs do gain new chairs on a regular basis, and also new directors, because that's how you get new ideas. But yeah, look, if I was to leave the club, and I will, right? I am going to leave the club at some point. It won't be because I don't love my club. You know, I love my club. But you know, look, I have spent the past couple of months looking under the bonnet of or seeing it up close, the governance of the game, and I just feel that if I was going to leave, I would leave them to that. So we'll see.
So have you resigned?
Well, look, you know, as I said to you, Michael, I will at some point leave the club. I will. And when I'm going to, you'll know about it.
I'll expect you back here to talk about it when you do.
Okay.
How tough has it been without Justin? Because, I mean, yeah. In both of your tenures at the club, you've been through more than probably most other clubs.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Thank
you. Know, the whole, you know,
right.
the big four.
We have.
You know, the coach leaving, the Robbie Farah, Jason Taylor saga, everything. You've been through it all.
We have. But, you know, as I was saying earlier to Michael, we've been through a lot. It's created resilience in the club, within everybody at the club, you know, myself included. We actually got to the point last year where we thought, you know, I think we faced everything as a club now. We hadn't faced this. But as a result of everything we'd faced, we're a much stronger club, a much, much stronger club. So it's not ideal to not have a CEO. It's absolutely not ideal. And we've been working through a lot of important activities. So, you know, we were in the middle of signing our funding agreements for the Centre of Excellence, and that has continued. We have good people. So Justin had a very strong and has a very strong leadership team underneath him, and they've stepped up. So we haven't skipped a beat. We've kept, and I think that's the reason that sponsors have remained engaged and supported. Our membership continues to grow. You know, all the metrics are still heading the right way. As I said, we still have signed funding in Justin's absence. But of course you want your CEO back. It's not ideal to have them on the side. It's like having the captain sidelined.
Not having Michael here.
Yeah.
Well, Zach, it'd be remiss of me not to send out a shout out today to Ivan Cleary. It's his birthday. I imagine that name, it feels like a lifetime ago since you had to worry about Ivan Cleary and the drama around the coaching situation.
Oh, yeah. Look, you know, Ivan's a good person, as you know. I mean, I've never said anything to the contrary. And as you know, we liked having him as a coach and we fought to keep him. But that, you know, that's over now. We're really happy with our new coach. And Michael's a good person, you know. He's getting on with it, you know. He's just getting on with running the club, and he's picked it all up. You know, we had some challenges last year when we went through the coach situation. But look, happy birthday, Ivan, because, you know, Ivan's a good man. You know, I like him. He's a family man, and we wish him well this year. I mean, I don't hope that he beats us. I hope that we finish higher on the ladder than Penrith, but we wish him well.
Knowing what you know now and what rugby league's given you over the last 5 years, would you do it again?
Look, on any given day, rugby league is the best thing I've ever done and the worst thing I've ever done. I think I've said that publicly and privately before. Yeah, of course I would. I think that what I like to do is I like to be able to contribute. I feel like I've been able to contribute. It's certainly been important for women, I think, to have had a couple of female chairs. And, you know, I had Rebecca Frizzell in the beginning, and now I've got Lynn Anderson. And so, you know, to have a couple of female chairs in the game, I think has progressed the game, and certainly our female fans are very positive about it. We've grown the female members in our club. I do it for reasons of what I can give to the organisation, in this case a sport, that I'm working with. And I feel like, you know, I feel really proud of my contribution.
When you came into the role, you set out to do a lot of things. If this was the end, not that saying you are, are you comfortable?
Trying to get rid of me. I think Mike's just trying to get rid of me.
Well, are you comfortable with where you've Are you proud of what you've done and where you'll leave it, whenever that is?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm really proud. One of the, you know, I guess from 4.5 years ago, one of the greatest challenges for us was actually to right the ship financially, and we've done that. You know, to have come out of the end of last year in a position that was profitable. I mean, we might slip back under now that we've got the fine, but it's a really wonderful position to be in, a very strong club. I feel very proud of that. You know, my board has done a really great job in working with our CEO to build this club to where it is, a club that our sponsors and members can be proud of, which is why, as I said to you, our sponsors have remained firm during this period. I mean, it must have been difficult for them. And I know it was, because I spoke to some of them, but they didn't waver, right? They didn't waver. They questioned the sport, they didn't question the club. And I think that's really important.
What's the expectation? Let's look forward. You want to finish higher than the Panthers, no doubt.
Yes, we do.
to prove that you are the team of the West.
But well, that's right.
what's Marina Go's expectation for the Tigers in 2019?
Oh, you know, I can only go on our coach. So we've got this, you know, we've got a wonderful coach who's come in and said, you know, we have to play finals. That is it. We have to play finals, and that enthusiasm has engaged everybody around the club, and so. So that has to be our expectation, doesn't it? It does. And I don't know that I want to put... I don't want to jinx the club. So I'm a bit superstitious. So, but, you know, anywhere higher than 9 would be great. we've got a great group of young men playing for us every weekend. And I would love for them to play finals. You know, it would be such a wonderful position for them to be in, given that we haven't played for so long.
And also the fact that it's... Robbie Farrow and Benji Marshall.
Oh, absolutely.
With the club as well.
Yeah, and that, you know, and if I'm not a religious person, I say if there's a God, then we really should be playing finals, shouldn't we? After everything that we've been through, I think we deserve it this year. So, look, let's see.
Bankwest Stadium, you head there this year to host some games. Is that the future? Do you think for the club, obviously without losing its roots there in Campbelltown and Leichhardt, but yeah. The start of exciting things for the club.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, we're excited about, you know, that's one of three home grounds for us. We still play at Leichhardt and Campbelltown, obviously. But it's a great space. It's a really exciting new venue. And I think the fact that the first game actually of Bankwest Stadium is the game that we play against the Eels on Easter Monday. And it's sold out. You know, to play to a sold out stadium, I don't know that we've ever done that. I mean, we have had a few packed at Leichhardt, but this is a grown-up stadium. It's going to be interesting.
Hopefully they pack into Leichhardt Oval round 1, 5:30 Saturday against Manly.
Yeah, oh, look, that's going to be such a wonderful game. We love Leichhardt. It's got, you know, it just, there's sentiment there. There's a lot of emotion. And the wonderful thing about round 1, which I want to say to you, is that we've decided to dedicate round 1 to women. And I know it's kind of off schedule for the NRL, but women are really important to our club, and this for us is a signal to hopefully all the women. They know that they matter to us, but for everyone in the game to understand how important women are to our club from round 1 going forward. So that's another extra thing that we're doing with our club from round 1.
All right, thank you, Marina, for giving us your time, especially in what's been another tough week for the club.
Thank you.
All right. As I mentioned, it's been a tough week for the Tigers, but they're looking forward to round 1, as are we here at NRL.com. Inside the NRL is back next week on Monday afternoon for the first time in 2019.